Welcome everybody. We have received the following apology. The apology from Honorable Tongwana, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Stay, Honorable Minister and the PM. Because tomorrow we are debating, so it's understandable when honorable members, they are not here. We are going to ask the chair of the board to lead in the presentation on the response of the investigation that he has done on the companies that communities have alleged the poor conditions of their relations and how they have been treated as communities. So we are now going to allow the chair to lead us on those responses. Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I'm going to try to give a summary of what the portfolio committee, you know, kind of encapsulated when we last came here, and I'll try to answer some of the issues that came out pertinent to the Forest Sector Charter Council, and even to indicate that the process is ongoing as we're talking right now. Now, the matters raised by the portfolio committee are as follows. Non-involvement by communities in forestry issues. That was the first one. The second one was the issue of information dissemination, where it was indicated that now forestry industry seems to be picking people that they talk to instead of talking to the whole community. Then the third one was isolation on forest-located communities by industry. And I think within this came up the issue of cattle grazing and the other issues. And then from there came in the issue of poor working conditions in forest farms, where the forest farmers, you know, indicated that they were not treated very well by forestry companies. And then from there came in the issue of lack of enforcement measures resulting in non-compliance with triple bottom E. Now, from there came in the issue of poor performance in ownership management control and skills development, poor women participation, and poor living conditions of employees in this forest sector, you know, council members. Now, the responses to the portfolio committee, the background is as follows. Council was invited to the portfolio committee meeting in November 2017. Council presented at that time the latest status of transformation. And we said at that level, at the time we were at level 4, which is a score cut of between 65 and 74, and it gives the companies which scored level 4, 100% procurement relief in one way or another in terms of triple BE. Council informed about reaction from some communities where we said people didn't have toilets, people were not living in very good conditions, and people were treated as slaves at one time or another. And council was mandated to react accordingly to these issues. Now, We are reacting, today we are reacting as follows to the issues concerned. The first one on non-involvement or participation of communities in forest issues. By the time we came here to the portfolio committee, already we had established what we call a community outreach program. And the community outreach program by that time had completed its phase one. They are already on phase two as we are talking now. Now, some of the findings that I give you are a sequel to this community outreach program phase two, where the community members of the council went out to government offices and companies to find out what they were doing about the issues raised, if I should put it that way. Now, what they came out with is that now, most of the companies which are in good standing in terms of the Forest Sector Charter Council, in terms of accreditation, were implementing some of the programs which are required by the broad-based black economic empowerment. And secondly, there were problems also identified by these, you know, communities, so to say. Now, one of them was the fact that now the lease rental monies which were levied on land which belonged to them was not adding value to their lives in any way whatsoever. And I think maybe the Department of Agriculture can respond to that. Now, secondly, funding in terms of new enterprises, especially the small ones, was inaccessible. Three, the issue of land availability. I think we went to Richards Bay, where we found one community which says one of the local municipalities came in and told them that now they cannot use the land available because it belongs to the chief or something like that. They couldn't use that land at all. Now, sadly, the community, those members of the communities who are involved in forestry are saying now they are concerned with the illegal operations in terms of pole treating, etc. And lastly, they said now when their produce is transported to the stations where, is it now, what do you call them? The places where the sidings, most of their produce is shaved off, is taken away. Now, they were pleading that now, when we discuss issues with the chief executive officers of companies, they should be weighing stations when the trucks leave, where they load up their produce, and a weighing station again at the sidings to ensure that the load loaded is exactly the same load that goes to the sidings themselves. Now, at the same time, we introduced, council mandated me in the strategic planning, the last strategic planning that we had in 2017, that now, I must initiate visits to chief executive officers to ensure that they are conscientized and sensitized about issues germane or relevant to triple broad-based black economic empowerment. Now, with these visits that I started, I was able to, one, sensitize chief executive officers of companies that the portfolio committee is not happy with the way they treat people in their own forestry companies. Now, the CEOs of companies then said to me, maybe the best thing to do is for you to come in and we go to the communities themselves so that you can see exactly what is happening in these communities. The first institution I went to was SAFCOR. The second one was SAPI. The third one is Kulani. Yeah, Kulami in the northern province. Now, at all these institutions that I went to, we took pictures of the houses the people were staying in, the ablution systems that they were using, or the toilets that they were using, the number of black women who were participating in those programs. And I asked, you know, the acting ED here to make it a point that she includes pictures of some of the visits that we made, which indicate exactly the number of people that we found in those areas. Now, in terms of poor working condition in forest farms, myself together with DAF, and I think this decision was taken by DAF, that now the issue in terms of treating employees badly in the farms themselves should be taken over to the Department of Labor, because they have inspectors who should be taking care of such issues. And I think, you know, I'll leave this one to DAF to answer. Now, in terms of the Forest Sector Charter Council lacking enforcement powers, like we said, the last time we came here, we talked about introducing a mandatory levy or a statutory levy to ensure that now small farmers who don't want to belong also contribute towards the advancement of black communities in one way or another, rather than now doing business in the country and not doing anything whatsoever. But now recently, when we were discussing issues with the council, we realized that that mechanism alone was not going to work. We then came out with the fact that now we must develop guidelines which are in line with the BEE Act to ensure that basically all the companies which operate in the sector are compliant in terms of what should be done in terms of triple bottom E. Now, if you look at the slide now, which is reflected now, you'll see that now we talked about the issue of certificates of good standing to be issued to compliant companies. Now, here we are depending on the agreement of DTI and other government departments, enforcing the issue of the production of this certificate before they do business with any company. The building sector is already doing it, if I must say so. For you to do work in the building sector, you need that NHBR whatever certificate. We are saying that now this will be a certificate of compliance that comes from us as a council to ensure that the member is in good standing. The member is in good standing. Now, a list of compliant companies to be submitted to government departments, these internal levers of afforestation solicited to ensure that business with reference to BEE is allocated only to compliant companies. Currently, I can give a very good example. Currently, the furniture sector is supposed to belong to forestry. But the furniture sector is showing us the middle finger because DTI keeps supporting them with funds without, you know, coming to us and saying to us, you're supposed to be doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, secondly, we've asked SAFCOT. SAFCOT is supposed to be an empowering, should I say, provider. Whoever buys locks from SAFCOT becomes, you know, a BEE compliant partner. But now, SAFCOT also, in terms of the Act, SAFCOT doesn't want to apply for a certificate to be compliant as we're talking right now. We tried to assist them, but now they are indicating that now there's a blockage somewhere. Already small companies that buy locks from SAFCOT are complaining that they are buying locks from SAFCOT, but they are not getting any pleasure whatsoever in terms of their BEE compliance. Now, that factor is a factor which is pulling us down because the number of members that belong to the sector itself will never increase until such time that we make it a point that now things are simplified for the small and emerging, you know, business owners in forestry. Now, developing and issuing of enforcement guidelines compliant with Section 10 and Section 13A of the BEE Act. The rules are there which we can apply in terms of land and water licensing, which we can apply. But if you don't apply, those companies will keep on defying us in one way or another. Yes, indeed, BEE has no, should I put it this way? I always say that now we depend on the good heart of people, altruistic, for them to see that doing complying with BEE tenants is a good thing to do, especially companies. There is no legislative imperative which forces a company to do business with government in one or another. And because of that, you know, some of them just tell us now, you can't do us anything. The small companies will tell you, I don't even want to see you in my premises in one or another, because we've started the visits themselves. Now, introduction of a mandatory levy, that I talked about, I'm not going there. Poor performance with reference to ownership, management, control, and skills development. This has been prioritized in the Act as priority element. Any company that achieves less than 40% in terms of these is going to be discounted. It will never get level 4. Now, our visit to industry, as we're talking currently, has indicated that now most of the big companies have started their training institutes within their premises to train people in terms of the required skills, a thing which was not there in the past. We went to 3 or 4 of them, already they are training their own people. Some were even complaining that the SPM CETA is denying to give them money because they say most of the money has been shifted to universities. And then I think I'll come to that as time goes on. Poor women participation, quite okay. This is one of the factors involved. But our proposal here in terms of poor women participation in forestry is, one, why can't we take part of the money that is levied to this in terms of land lease and create a women and youth academy where both women and youth can be trained, especially in communities which have a high intense forestry labor system. Why can't we do that? Because the money has been lying fallow. Every time I come here, we talk about money. The money is lying fallow somewhere else. Communities are not getting their money as they should. Why can't this money be taken out? We create an academy of women and youth to ensure that they are well trained and they can compete equally in terms of forestry issues. And if we do that, I think we'll go far. Now, recently I read that now the University of Mpumalanga is the only forestry university in the country. I'm not saying we should go there because university education is quite different from an institution which trains people in terms of competencies with certain skills. Now, conditions of employment, low wages, unfair treatment, etc. We visited some companies. I think we have some pictures in one of the reports which shows the kind of houses the people are living in. I'm not saying we visited all of them. We're still going to visit some of them after this. Now, the status of transformation for this year will be issued very soon. But I think this status of transformation is going to be a different picture altogether from all the years because of the 4 priority elements which were introduced. Some of the companies are going to fall short in terms of that. And I think this is where the CEOs of companies who are trying very hard to create training institutions within their own companies, you know, to ensure that indeed they do very well in terms of that. Now, more planned visits to companies to continue until satisfactory compliance is observable. Engagement with relevant government departments is vital. Okay? Now, when I came here, or when we came here the last time, there was a suggestion from one of the portfolio committee members that, one, why can't we touch DPE, small and medium enterprises, to ensure that they are on board? We wrote a letter to them. No response. We wrote a second letter. No response. Now, the second department, which is non-compliant, even when we call them to come in, is the local government department. They are not teaming up. The third one is the Department of Water Affairs, and that's where we have a lot of problems in terms of expansion of forestry. They are also not turning up, coming aboard. Now, I don't have the powers to force them to come in. I can only appeal to members of the Department of Agriculture who are within the council itself to ensure that they sensitize their heads to talk with the people and make it a point that they attend. And we have been trying to do that all the time. Now, the other issue perhaps that we should be doing as a council is to ensure that now we continuously, even though they reject us at one time or another, interact with these members to make them realize the fact that now for people to share in the, you know, the economy of the country, you can't avoid broad-based economic empowerment. Yes, we might have applied it wrongly in the past. And as it is right now, you know, people are starting to realize that you don't empower an individual and think you've empowered a community. We want to empower communities as it is. Now, a request is submitted to DAF about the creation of a youth and women. I think I talked about that. And perhaps that will be my closing statement. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can we get members to engage with the report from the Chair, Honorable Kruger and Honorable Malone?
Thank you, MJ, and thank you for the presentation. It seems like the council is just washing their hands in, you know, I don't know what the Bible say, wash your hand and onskuld. You know, I can't believe that the Small Business Development Department haven't responded on two letters. And I would like to see that letter, so I want to take it up with the minister itself. Because it's a very important part of small business development is to help communities that we are talking about. That's the first point. The second point, Madam Chair, is I would like from the chairperson to chairperson of the council, of course, to hear more about the problem about the simplicity of you know, entering the small business world, because in one of the slides you said there's a problem. The process is too difficult. They need to simplify that process for small businesses to become active. So I'd like to give us some more background. And then the last point, Madam Chair, also it's questionable when it's said that finance, the access to finance, there's no, for the small businesses in this industry, this finance is not accessible. I mean, government spent last year more than 15 billion rand across all the departments on small business development. So I can't see why some of small businesses have access to finance and one sector of South Africa economy don't have access to finance. So, and that is the question. So I just want to know where is the crossroads for this industry? Why don't they have access to finance? What is the problem? Because we need to solve out the problem. I mean, there's a CIFA, and CIFA must look after this small businesses and communities that want to be part of bigger industry. And when big business bully small business, I think that's where the problem is. If big business is gatekeeping, and the last question, now I think my colleague is going to ask that. Thank you, Chief.
Chair, I think from where I'm sitting, this is work in progress. Because this exercise is not complete. Because amongst others, we did not visit the MTO. And I will continue to mention this MTO. We did not visit MTO. So what I would want you to do is to indicate to us as to when are you going to complete this exercise. Because you see, with us, we work with time frames. And I'll tell you why we must get to that date, Chair. You know, the report by Dr. Mahango is saying things are okay, where he comes from. The report from the Portfolio Committee says things are not okay because the Portfolio Committee met with affected people and affected individuals who told us this thing. It was not a desktop research or work. We went there and we got a different story altogether. Now, I am not going to contest your report in this meeting up until it is concluded. And once it is concluded, Chair, because I want you to agree with me on this one, let me repeat because I see you are disturbed. Once it is concluded, Chair, I would want we must investigate possibilities of the Portfolio Committee going back there. Going back there. Just to go and confirm what Dr. Mahango is saying. because I have a serious problem. It means somebody is not telling the truth. And I will not accuse Dr. Mahango and team. I will not accuse the portfolio committee and the communities that we visited. Somebody is not telling the truth. So I'm basically saying, let's get, when are you going to complete this exercise? Once you have completed the exercise, give us a complete report. When that is done, because from where I'm sitting, I assume that that report will not be too much different from what we have. Once it is done, we must go and verify. And once we have verified, then the Bobbe must dance. So basically, that is my suggestion, Chair, because I can't say anything much because there's a serious contradiction between what we saw, what we heard, and what they are saying. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, when we went to the communities, we heard lots of complaints. The doctor has said that they have visited all the big companies, the three big ones. It's Safcol and SEPI and another one. But nothing is said about MTO. One of the biggest complaints in the community was about MTO. So, you know, you can't just go and visit some and not all and then come back and say everything is fine. There is some problem there, so you need to go to them all, the community complained about. Then the other problem that I have is that you tell us that people own the property, it's rented out, and they don't get the benefit for it. How is that possible? I mean, I just don't understand that one. It doesn't make sense to me. If you own the property and you rent it out, you must get the benefit. I mean, it's as simple as that. And then, you know, why is it that the council come here and they don't bring us solutions? They bring us more problems. With all due respect, you know, where are the solutions to the problems? Or doesn't the council have that? I would like to know what solutions you bring. You can't just say, well, you know, we've investigated and we found a problem and now it's your problem. You must come with the solutions as well. What do we do? But it must, if the report is not complete, then I beg you to go to all the other companies as well that are involved with the communities and find out if the situation is similar there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, I am in agreement with what Honourable Maloya said, that this is work in progress. My only comment I certainly want to welcome the idea from Dr. Mohong, who indicated the idea of a institute, a training institute, whether it's a college or whatever, Chair. I want to suggest perhaps that this idea must be further explored, that the department must play a key role in that exploration, but it must involve also not only the fiber processing CETA, but in actual the top one, the National Skills Authority. To leverage funding from there to have FAT college develop Chairperson. That certainly can be done. Thank you very much.
Chair?
Now, I'm going to try to respond to some of the questions, but I'll allow answer to the issue of funding. Okay, now, agriculture said they would respond to the issue of funding because they are the custodians of that and not the council itself. Communities say to us they have issues with the lease of land and they don't see value for the money of their rentals. Okay, now, I pass the issue over to agriculture for them to try to sort it out. Perhaps now he'll respond to that. Can I just respond to the other issues of the The issue of the portfolio committee, no, the Further Sector Charter Council report not complete. Yes, indeed, it is not complete. And if you look at that report very well, you see that right at the bottom we've indicated that we must still come and visit MTO and the other campus, Amatola, etc. We are still going to do that. And most probably there are problems at MTO. Indeed, there are problems at MTO. What we did was we went to MTO trying to get an appointment so that we should go to the communities together with them. But at the present moment, our community outreach members are going to the communities. Now, the report that will be given, if it's going to be a complete report, say, it's a report which will indicate what I found when I was discussing issues with the CEOs and what the community outreach program people they found when they were dialoguing with the people themselves. It will be a two-pronged report which will be coming your way. One coming from me when I go out to the CEOs and to ask them to show me exactly what they are doing. And the second one will be the one from the community outreach people who go out now to communities themselves and talk with them. The MTO visit is on the line, and I think we've been trying to get an appointment with the CEO, Lawrence Polkingham, in terms of that, and I think they'll be giving us that appointment very soon. Now, secondly, the issue of funding, like I said, the issue of funding will be treated by DAF, not us. What I want members to understand is this. We merely act as an interface between industry, government, and communities as a council, an interface between the three. Where there is a problem inside our own meetings, because government is represented, communities are represented, and labor is represented, we make it a point that now we pass it over to the relevant people, and we ask the relevant people to ensure that they resolve that issue as speedily as they can. Now, the issue of... You said, now, how do we solve this issue of funding to small businesses to ensure that indeed they compete and indeed they survive? One thing that can be done by government, which has been done, I think so, but that members perhaps don't know how to apply, is the issue of new venture creation. IDC is in attendance in our meetings on a regular basis. And when we go out to communities, we invite IDC to be in, to assist people who want to apply for funding to do that. But unfortunately, people don't agree with some of the terms which are put down by IDC, so to say.
Can I just point of order here? New venture creation is about small business development, and IDC is not the persons to talk to. It's CEDA. So there's a difference, and that's why the council is going into brick walls, is because they talking to the wrong organization. You must talk to CEDA. CEDA stands for Small Business
Enterprise Development Agency. Yeah.
And what is the organization you're talking about? IDC stands for Industrial
Development Corporation.
There's a huge difference between small and industrial. That's why that's the problem. Thank you, Chief.
Now, the issue of leased land will be treated by the Department of Agriculture. And the issue of an institute of forestry, you know, as a leverage to ensure that now people are given the right skills and they can compete, you know, competitively with the big companies is also an issue there. I don't know if I left out anything, but I think I've tried to answer everything. But in the main, the report is not yet complete in the main because we are still going to conduct some visits. And, Chair, the Honourable Member here asked me when we'll be through with the visits themselves. Can you give me time so that I should liaise and coordinate with the ED and see what kind of timetable they have in mind? And then I'll then pass it over to you. Thank you very much.
Chair, before we go to... You know, we have called you to come first because we are finalizing the amendment of the National Forestry Act. So we want to know, in terms of your work, I've seen in your presentation you are talking about lack of enforcement power.
Yes.
So can you elaborate on that so that as we finalize the Act we are able to take cognizance of those issues that you've raised?
Now, fortunately, along those lines, one, we talked about the issue of a mandatory levy the last time, Chair. And you could feel that now some of the industry members who are around were trying to be, you know, resistant in one way or another. But I think right now they're seeing the light. And when we went into the BBB Act itself to see whether there are no levers we could use inside, we realized that now... we realize that in terms of Section 10 and Section 13A, we can be able now to leverage and ensure that industry complies whether they like it or not. Because that talks to who must be least lent to, that talks to the issues of water licensing also. And then that again talks to the issue that now if a member belongs to a particular sector, there is no way he can affiliate to a different sector like the furniture sector is doing as we're talking currently.
Thank you very much. DG and the DG.
Are issues that involve compliance to labor laws. And to this effect, I have had a long discussion with the DG of the Department of Labor to put actions into place where DAF does not become a facilitator who now has to account to this body, that DAF becomes part of the implementers so that we are able to protect the rights of those workers who work in our land as DAF. So we are going to put an action plan that would be reported here. Secondly, as far as funding is concerned, I think members are correct. There is funding that is accessible for small businesses on these lands, and that funding comes from CASP first. The second one has been developed through Operation Paviso in what is called blended finance that we are doing between us and the land bank. We are almost finalizing that program. That is going to talk to the entire support for smallholder farmers in general with specific reference to this. What has been an issue has been, and this is what I've addressed with my colleagues, that the intended beneficiaries do not know about these packages. These packages, we present them to Parliament, but the people for whom they are intended are not presented to about them. So that is the challenge that is facing us as a department. And I then ask the provincial departments who I'm meeting on the 17th in Mintek to carry the message to their own department, to their own constituencies about blended finance, what it means, so that they can engage with the farmers, and also the availability of CASP and how that CASP can be accessed by smallholder farmers. So as far as that is concerned, I think we need to be talking more to the beneficiaries and less, more to the beneficiaries, so that when you meet with them, they can talk to you about the effectiveness of our support to them in this area. I will leave the area of our leased land to my DDG here because it talks to the 70-year lease and category A and B, category B and C, and the extent to which we need to inject funding to a B and C. Can you take that, Mr. Masuda? Thank you, Chair.
Before, I just want to ask, when did CASP start to fund forestry project? When did it start? Because it has never been there.
We started that this year. Well, one of the things that has occurred about CASP, Madam Chair, has been its effectiveness and the extent to which it impacts on where we want it to be. Our segregation of that program has led to that lack of impact. So we have then said, if smallholder farmers, irrespective of what they do, need assistance, we will assist them, as long as the budget is there. And we have allowed that to happen this year. Thank you.
You know, so now we are using legislation and laws. CASP was established in terms of legislation. Are you saying that you have amended that legislation policy, therefore it can be funded so that as we go out as members, we are going to say, no, CASP is no longer for small supporting of smallholder farmers, even those that are forestry, they can be supported, so that it can be clear.
Let me clear it, Chair. I don't think the Division of Revenue Act is specific that when you, the agricultural support, comprehensive agricultural support program has never been stipulative in saying the farmer you support is an agro-farmer. It's a farmer who plants eggs. It's a farmer who plants maize. It said we are supporting small holder farmers. But what we have not done, and I cleared this with the Treasury Department, was to apply that to smallholders across the board. So when they knock on our doors, we were not able to do that. So we gave the impression, it is not in the act, Madam Chair, we gave the impression throughout that we're talking about farmers as in agriculture and narrowly defined agriculture as in animal husbandry and plant husbandry, grain in particular. Because plant husbandry should be involved in forestry. But we take grain and said maize and then said animal husbandry and said cattle. We never were broad, but it is a broad definition. So I would like you to leave this house knowing that we are actually DORA. There was no need to amend DORA. DORA as an act was simply saying it is about comprehensive producer support. And that's why we brought even a blended finance into it.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and also the Chair of the Forestry Council. The issue that was raised was around the lease agreement. Honorable Members would recall that during the consultations that we had from the 3rd of October, starting from Tata up to the 21st of November 2017, one of the areas that the communities were concerned about was the 70-year lease agreements, that the communities thought that they should be reviewed and be shortened as they thought that it deprived them of adequate and meaningful benefits in terms of the opportunities that they can accrue from the forest. Now, from where we are as a department, we look at Clause 68 of the lease agreement that provides that this can be looked at by the minister, that the minister may amend, suspend, or terminate a license that is issued in terms of the National Forest Act. And therefore, we have started in terms of engagements with the tenants to discuss the possible amendments that can be done to these leases. And we are currently in the process of just consulting with the communities, and the outcomes of these engagements between ourselves and the communities will then be shared with the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, Chair. While I agree with Honorable Maloi that we need to have this report completed and within maybe a specific time, but now I'm having a serious concern if you go to the issues raised. The first thing is that I don't clearly understand the relation between the issues raised, the action, and then the findings. It doesn't seem to me that the findings are addressing what was raised, rather than they are the findings of the action. They are the findings of the CEO or the action that they have taken. But now, if you go to this slide, which is having the there's poor working conditions, and unfortunately there
there is indication that on the visits and the findings found to be opposite. What worries me there is that after their field visit, what worries me is that these working conditions, we believe that we saw them being bad, poor working conditions. When the finding, the field visit, reveals the opposite, that worries me, really worries me, because it seems maybe we are telling lies. We did not see, or there were no poor working conditions in our visit when we went. That worries me. Therefore, I think maybe when this report is completed again, that should be taken into consideration, that there are issues which we ourselves had thought we raised because we believe that we have seen them. But now when the CO, when the field visit is found to be opposite, it worries me. And then maybe the field visits were only done to the places which did not have what we're talking about. But I would need some clarity on that part. Thank you.
It's something that we have raised a very important thing, Honorable Clapper. Maybe, Chair, can we indicate which areas you have visited? Is it there? Because it might find that he has not actually visited all the areas that we have.
Indeed, Chair, we didn't visit all the areas like it was indicated by the Honourable Member before. MTO, for instance, we visited MTO, but the Chief Executive Officer was not available to take us to the sites exactly where the communities are. And from what I hear from honorable members here, that most of the problems must be coming from NTO. Now, secondly, for the last 2 months or so, we've been trying to make an appointment with the community around MTO through Mr. Kivit, who is a member of the council himself. And every time we have an appointment with them, the date set, and we have already done our bookings, they would cancel and say, you know, they don't have enough people. But what we'll be doing, you know, currently is that M2O is prioritized as one of the companies that we should visit. And the other issue that makes it very difficult for us, you know, could zero in on specific problems which were enumerated by honorable members here, was the fact that when we asked for exact names of the companies where these anomalies were occurring, we were never given an exact place where these anomalies were happening. We were never given that. So what we are doing currently, we're just foofing and faffing as we go out to institutions, and one, to sensitize them about what the portfolio committee has found out, and two, for us to be able to see for ourselves as to what is happening, and three, to even indicate to them that now we'll be giving feedback to the portfolio committee, and there's a possibility that CEO of companies will also be invited to come in and come and react accordingly to the reports themselves. Yes, we'll be going to MTO. Yes, we'll be going to Amatola. Yes, I'm going to basically all the companies involved who are members of the Forest Sector Charter Council.
Honorable members, I want to close this matter by saying that the report is not complete. We give the Charter Council another space to do the work. But we are working with time frame, Chair.
Yes.
It cannot be lololo. So what we must do in the meantime, conduct those that you said you want to conduct for you to. So before the end of this meeting, we must have the time frame. So I wanted to close at that, honorable members, because we might discuss something. Because it's not all the companies that are well. They are those that are doing better. So, unfortunately, Chair, when the portfolio committee, we're still speaking to you, caucus late. When the portfolio committee gives you a task, you start with the areas that are problematic. So, to simplify the issues. we have the contact for those people that we have visited in Nasna, in Sabi, in KZN. We have all the numbers. So you don't have to ask somebody from your council. I know that is part of the council, but you can ask the numbers from our secretary, because those people are the ones that actually have talked to us as portfolio committee. Can we do that as you continue with that? Thank you very much, Chair, for coming and your team. Can we then have... Duff?
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The other issues that were raised during the period when the Portfolio Committee went to visit communities, and when the Portfolio Committee also engaged with the entities within the forestry sector, were responded to and are still being articulated by the Forestry Council, where we will give a detailed breakdown would be in terms of our response later on as we go through the bill, and also as we go into respective areas that were touched based on by the Forestry Council. Now, DG has already indicated the financial issues that are at stake. We would like to also indicate during this period that we will also engage with the areas that were identified by the Forestry Council of not being responsive. We will engage with DSBD, we will engage with DPE and water and sanitation, just to deal with the issues that were raised today. Further on, we note the inputs that were made by Honorable Madela on the National Skills Authority and the engagements that need to be made at that level, and it's something that we will have to take up and ensure that it's facilitated. Honorable Members, the presentation today will be made to respond to the issues that were laid in terms of labor matters. We have categorized this into four critical areas. One would be labor issues that emanate from non-compliance to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and to the Occupational Health and Safety Act. We have got issues that are health-related that would be issues that would need even the intervention of the Department of Health. There are issues of crime that would need the Ministry of Police. There are issues of human settlements that would also need engagements with the Department of Human Settlements, specifically when you talk about family separation
and other issues, social ills that would affect and would need to be dealt with by social development. But these are all issues that would be dealt with in line or with a program that is be developed within that space. On slide four, we address the issues of unfair labor practices. The issues that were raised were very low wages that are lower than those in the agriculture sector, especially around Mpumalanga, where the comparison was made with the compensation that was done to those who work in the banana plantations. There were issues around the unpaid leave during maternity. There were issues around accrual of leave, the long hours that the people would work, non-compensation of injury on duty, and you have got unavailability of protective clothing. Now, all of those, in terms of our contextualization, would say that they do not comply with the basic conditions in terms of labor relations, basic conditions of employment, and also the biggest issue here, honorable members, would be ensuring that those who are in the forestry sector also belong to the forestry South Africa, because there is a code of good practice that all members are expected to start dealing with. But one of the areas of critical importance is that this is voluntary. We still need to deal with enforcement issues when it comes to forestry matters. The next slide would deal with the poor working conditions that are there, and I think honorable members have been addressing this to say the contrast between the reporting should not be there, because when you go there, you will see these working conditions. Now, there's an issue around substandard housing, there's indecent sanitation, and there's lack of transport between a residence and the place of work, which also exposes the people who work within the forestry sector to a lot of vagaries that affect crime and all of those social ills. Now, we also paint that in terms of the legislative context, we pinpoint where the issues are in terms of labor, so that it's something that can be positioned within legislation and be shared with the relevant department, and we just wanted to first contextualize it and give a way forward later on. Now, there was also an issue that was raised on slide 6 dealing with the issue around the non-payment of UIF, which is very critical. As we look at Section 5 of the Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act, which compels all employers to pay such an insurance and contributions for all the workers. On slide 7, the were social matters that were raised, and these social matters would be in terms of family separations because of the basically of the human settlements that are there that would not necessarily be accommodating families, and the amenities in and around those establishments not being conducive to established families, and therefore leading to potential health hazards that we are having, HIV infections, and also the promotion of child-headed household and exposure to crime and drug abuse. Now, all the social ills cannot be dealt separately. You need to have a holistic way of how to deal with the issues within the forestry sector. And one of the areas, while we refer to the Occupational Health and Safety Act, there is also an element to say that where people are housed within a forestry entity, there's also a need to look at the human settlement point of view, and also the social development and the issues around social cohesion within the areas that people work in. On slide 8, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we also raise issues around the general matters raised in relation to the forestry sector. Now, the Minister has already written to the Minister of Labor requesting for an intervention in terms of these issues, raising all the issues that I've just articulated now. And the Department of Labor has responded,
requesting detailed information on those issues. And there has been engagements with the Department of Labor where investigations have been identified where the Department of Labor would go out. And they are quite willing and able to come and do a presentation at this committee to deal with the issues that are here. Now, it's very important to raise this issue that currently, while the Forestry Council was indicating that they are currently busy with their own investigation, there is also an equal investigation that is being done by the Department of Labor on labor issues, and therefore this assessment is going to also complement what the Forestry Council had indicated earlier this morning. Now, we have also taken a keen interest in terms of our engagements with the Forestry Council, that there is a need to also involve the Financial Sector Conduct Authority to address the issues that were raised. Honourable members would recall that there were issues raised around the payment of the pensions by people who were in the forestry sector. So there's an involvement of a Financial Sector Conduct Authority to deal with those issues. My apologies, I've been dealing with this. I've got an eyesight problem, so I cannot even see very close by. On slide 10, we deal with the issue that, as already outlined, that the Department of Labor is already conducting these visits. So they will be doing what we call a compliance audit, and we expected that this compliance audit would be finalized by the end of May, so that this presentation can be made to the Portfolio Committee, which will be then be supplementary in terms of the work that the Portfolio Committee has done and also the Forestry Charter Council has done. Now, the other area in terms of slide 11, which is an issue that was raised by the Portfolio Committee, and the Portfolio Committee has been seized with this matter, where there was initially an indication that there is a need for a joint program with the Department of Public Enterprises and all these other role players to ensure that we deal with the issues around the pension payouts, that we already have got a task team that has got DAF, that has got a DPE, and also the Western Cape Forestry Sector Forum and MTO, just to address outstanding pension issues. The task team has since met, and we are roping in the expertise of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, and we are already in discussions in terms of the possibilities of just conducting roadshows to even get those who are not even conscious, maybe, of these pension payouts within the Western Cape, so that we can drum up that kind of consciousness from people who are involved. Now, on slide 12, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we highlight the intended impact that we would like to have in terms of the interventions. We have first identified the role players, the Department of Labor and the Financial Authority, just to deal with the issues around labor. We have also identified where the problems are in terms of the report that was already given. We are currently resolving the issue around the harmonious working relationship within the sector. And we, as a department, we will ensure that the Portfolio Committee is kept abreast in terms of the two areas, those dealt with by the Department of Labor and those dealt with the financial, the FSCA, have been finalized with these communities. Then we will come and present this to the Portfolio Committee. We would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the guidance given in terms of the reporting. As we discuss the bill, we have also provided a 60-pager that deals with the other issues that have got emanating within the forestry industry. Chair, I would like to end off by indicating that I think in terms of the timelines, and the chair is not here, the term of the charter ends the 2nd of August, and we will push the charter just to ensure that the reporting is done before that, so that they synchron in terms of the work that they are doing and finalization of that work before the end of their term. And lastly, Chair, we would like to apologize because the team that always was with the portfolio committee during the consultation were stuck in the U.S. in terms of attending one conference, and we had to do the report and report to the chair. And I hope that they will be here during the next session when we have got the discussions on the bill. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ibich. Honorable members, anything on the report? Thank you very much, DDG and your team, and we hope in the next meeting we'll have all the... Oh, Honorable Mapanga, sorry.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I've got only one question here. It's with regard to the legislative context. On your slide 4, the last bullet, in the forest sector, all companies are encouraged to be members of the Forest South Africa Association, which further compels its members to practice fair labor. I just want to check here, Chair. Is it compulsory that all the companies in the forest sector should be member of the Forest South Africa Association? And if it is so, can we have the time frame as to when all these companies are supposed to be the members? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let us just say that compliance to the law is the first thing and would not be something that would be dealt with because you are a member of a particular council. That it's obliged that each and every company complies with the law. What we are trying to address here is an issue of good practices that happen within a particular industry. For instance, if you are a member of the Forestry South Africa, then there is a code of good practice that each and every member is expected to abide with or comply with. And therefore, it becomes easier to have self-regulation instead of a government regulation. I think that's the context, Honorable Mapanga, that we are trying to bring in from a self-regulation point of view. But the regulation in terms of all prescripts that are in government is the responsibility of government. This was just to bring in good practice within an organization. Now, not everybody would be compelled to join because this is a voluntary body. All members are encouraged to join so that they can be there. So those who are not members of this would still be expected to comply with all legislation in the country. Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks, Honorable Mapanga, for the question.
Thank you, Chair. My concern is that the report from the departments seems to be far away from the one of the council, whereas I thought this the conjuncture would be assisting. I don't know whether they would have a way of trying to make them understand exactly what we need here and their responsibility. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe I should just indicate that now, in terms of belonging to the Forest Sector Charter Council. We don't only have Forestry South Africa. We have different associations coming in. And I'm not going to mention them, but there are many. They are there, SOPA, etc., etc. They are there. Now, secondly, members join the council because there's a procurement enticement dangled in front of them, so to say. But apart from that, as long as an industry operates in the country, like the DDG has already said, you are bound by the rules and regulations or acts of the country to contribute towards the development and enhancement of the people in that country. And this is where we come in with these enforcement guidelines that we spoke about. Now, secondly, if you look at the report of DAF as compared to us, DAF focused mostly on the Department of Labor and how the Department of Labor would assist. Now, what we reported on was actual findings when we went out to the companies. It's such unfortunate that now the companies perhaps that we went to are companies which seem to be doing very well. And I'm definitely sure when we come back, you know, in the second session, we are definitely going to reveal quite a lot of issues that were not revealed as we're talking right now. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honourable Mpanga is, Honourable Kapa is correct. We, before we came here, we had a long meeting with the Minister on this. And I think we need to have a much more stronger alignment between us and the Council, which we do have an interaction. But I think we need to be reporting on the one pager in terms of our common understanding, because we account to this body. So that what we bring here is one voice. Instead of bringing, I think Department of Labor must bring the compliance side. We should bring the pragmatic side of how the laborers are treated in there and how we deal with that. Those are our lands, that's our forestry. Labor deals with laws. We cannot be reporting on labor. We have got less to do with that job. We have got more a job to do with our employees, our employees who are working in the land which we own, in the forest which we own. So I think in that sense, we have taken a decision with the Minister that will be interacting quite pragmatically with the Council.
Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. what I want to say, I think I was not given a chance to say even before, but it also affects you, DG. And the department. There's a clause that says the people shall govern. The people shall govern. That clause is part of the Constitution of South Africa, which affects all departments. Your department is supposed to have an agreement with Water Affairs, with the one that you just mentioned, local government, labor, yes, all that should be intertwined. And that is why we had to develop a policy called integrated development planning. Integrated development planning was not only meant for local government, it was also meant for how government has to synergize its operations. It doesn't matter, even if it's labor issues, they are your issues. They are your issues. The people that we talking about that have raised issues in that particular community, they've raised human settlement issues, they've raised labor issues, they've raised all these issues. They are integrated into one person. When the person on the ground does not see you as labor or agriculture, see you as government. So it is your responsibility. When we go on site and then we find that these are issues that are raised, immediately you call the affected people. You as agriculture, we went with you on the ground. Immediately you call them on the ground you call them in your offices, you sit down and say, these are the issues that have been raised at the department and an oversight done by the portfolio committee. And out of these issues, these are your issues, what do you say in them? So that when we go and report back, we report holistically, we're giving an answer to what? We're now going to call Agri-Labor, come and account on this 1, 2, and 3. No, it can't be. It can't be. We are one government. The silo operation must stop, and it must be stopped by you. We appointed you to work together as a team, as one body. So you can't tell us we must go. We don't have that time. 5 years is very small. So, firstly, your reports don't have time frames. Secondly, it's like you're just operating, you know. And when you report, you're not even detailed. You assume that some of us know what you are doing. I'm new even in this portfolio. I don't even know what you are doing. But your reporting, it's as if, you know, what I found out is that all officials report the same way. Is that we don't want politicians to know what we are doing. But we want to comply and report, you know. That must end. You need to give us information. When you say these are the issues that community said they want you to attend, this is how you have taken. Don't say that we have developed a program. What is that program? I mean, you're talking to me as if I'm an illiterate, you know. And that must stop. It must stop. Your reporting, it's not what we want. What we want is information. Let's share the information. Let's give you ideas and say, yeah, go and rectify it like this. Share with us what is it that you have done already. So, Chair, that's what I wanted to say, even in all these reports. That's all I found. Every time one points the other. You know, this is not my responsibility. It's somebody else's responsibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think just to amend relevant information, because if you must just say they must bring information, so relevant information to the matter. That's what we want. So not the information, because yes, that's why I must amend that one so that it's very clear. We want relevant information on the matter, so it shouldn't be because if you want to get a report of the department, you will about start a good vision and mission every day, and you will be troubled. Hey. so we are particular in some of those things. I want to remember to take members through where we come from so that we don't lose sight. We visited this, we had public hearings, consulting our communities, talking about legislation, and in those public hearings, communities raised the concern. It's not about legislation, but it's the communities that stays in those forestries raising the concern about how forestry that's supposed to develop their life is destroying their lives. We then said, we called the department, they come and present, we chase them back. Remember? We chase them back and say, let's give the council opportunity to go and investigate on the issues and come back to the committee on what are the issues, whether they have legislative powers. Before that, we then commission our own staff of parliament to look at the act, because we are amending the act, whether the act is not an impediment to all the issues that we found on the ground, and it was very clear that the Act gave necessary regulatory framework to the department to regulate
and make all the companies that they enter into an agreement to comply. Unfortunately, the department has not implemented that. I think we must not miss that point. Because that's where the department has not done its work. And we then ask the council to investigate, which we know the council is the advisory council to the minister. It's not even investigatory. They don't even have those investigating powers that can be revealed to us. We are not even sure whether some of the information they've cut, this cannot go. You know, that's the protocol that we have. We are not doubting your report, Chair, but I'm just saying because of the legislation, you are an advisor to the minister in that context. But we said that I think as we finalize legislation, we should look at that, whether do we need to strengthen the compliance section, the enforcement, whether there is a need to actually to look how the council functions give it. I've been going through the legislation with the content advisor. The council is not established in terms of the Forestry Act itself. It's established in terms of BBBE Act. So, which is something that when we debate, we should look at how we make sure that if indeed we need a structure to monitor on daily basis the workings of the private sector, because that's another weakness that we must accept as government, where there is no better or a good collaboration with the government on equal footing in all the activities of government. When it comes to private sector, you find government wanting in most instances, or private sector being on top of the public, and government must never forget that they are standing on behalf of 54 million of the people of South Africa. Now it's 55 or 57. So that should never, government must never miss that as you interact, you represent as a public official. Everywhere you go, you are carrying the 57, is it 57 now or 50? Yeah, 57 million South Africans, they are looking upon government to deliver services to them. So as we interact with anybody, including, as Honorable Show, you know, who Minister Fitsikni Mufumane has introduced intergovernmental relation framework, which guides how government works together. It's not now, 2003 or 2005, and it's still an issue in 2018. So I think there is something is wrong with how our government is operating. We have to look at how those that are sick, particularly DGs, maybe it's a problem that you have. We have new DGs every day, and because those are the people who must make those things happen, because they are the accounting officers. Because everybody will tell when you ask. You know, there was one MEC in Eastern Cape, Honorable Tapa, who used to say, you know, I've got a difficulty. When I'm supposed to deliver, I've been told about PFMA. Uba anilo PFMA. So because most of accounting officers, they if they're not doing the work, they hide behind PFMA. So accounting officers. And you know, one thing that this government has done, I'm repeating it, I've started with it when we came into government. If that Ramasodi will remember, that one of the things that this government has done was to restructure public service and make our DDGs even to be above the ministers in terms of the salaries, because they understood, the government understood that you are going to get people who have knowledge, people who understand the system of government, people who will direct and shape government to give our people salaries. So they are earning far more than ministers, DGs. And it was not done wrongfully, so it was understood that you are getting the people who are skilled, people who have capacity, people who have a vision, strategic leadership, who will give that leadership into the department and make sure that there is service delivered. I'm repeating this thing so that it should sink in the head. If you go in, and it's the same, you go to municipal managers, you go to HODs in the provinces, it's like that. But you know the weakness of some of the DGs, they want to be politicians. You can't be two things. And that's where hampers the service delivery. So if we can retrieve all the documents ready to govern, your RDPs, because some of the people, when you have NDP, where RDP is a reg. So those are the complementary policy documents. When you must pull them together and make sure that there is service delivery on the ground, and policies are meant to resolve problem of the people. If the policies we are producing are not resolving the problem, then there is a problem. Because policies are about that. If the policy does not resolve the problem, then we are in crisis. So, and we shouldn't have, when we have capable, skilled, and visionary officials to implement our policies. You go everywhere, the policies are very good, lack of implementation. And you know what? The problem is this, the semantics that you've been talking about. The labor will say, it's my terrain. Don't talk about agriculture, will say, extension officers are mine. When the person, even a health minister goes to the butcher, he doesn't want to talk to extension officers. He wants the health practitioner. But those things are interrelated. You know, I give an example that is simple, because I like to be very simple, that agriculture maintains and treats an animal and make it feed them well until it reaches the butcher. When it entered the butcher, the health department starts kicks in. So, and that handing over is very meticulous, and for government to succeed in implementing its policies. So we have to make sure that our policies indeed does not become against one another. They must complement one another. Ourselves, as we work, we must complement one another in the work that we do. So thank you very much. We hope in the next meeting the report will actually give us a direction, even if it will not be me. But we hope, seated somewhere. You know, one chairperson came last week, was seated there representing a particular organization, was the former chair of this committee. He said, he was the chair. I'm happy about the program, the progress of this committee. So seated there representing communities. So ourselves, as we are seated there, we must say, hey, the committee is still doing the job. and department is working towards improving our people's lives. So that's what we must strive, all of us. And thank you very much. I was giving this long in welcoming the parliamentary officer, legal officer of the parliament, for her to come and lead us in the second session. Did you want to say something before we close?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Chiu, for the outlook in terms of how the sector should be operating. I think in terms of the presentation that was made today, Chair, it was just to deal with the labor matters, and those labor matters also have got a deadline in terms of the work that we have dealt with labor. Now, the biggest issue here is how the department was central in terms of coordinating the work that has been done by the Department of Labor and FSCA and bringing them together. And I closely and agree with Honorable Chiu that the Intergovernmental Framework Act would assist us in terms of moving ahead. And this is just but one example in terms of how the department has managed to move the issues around labor forward in a prescriptive manner that is there within the BCEA, the labor relations, and also the occupational health and safety, while also dealing with the pension issues. The issues that were raised will be taken seriously to heart, Honorable Chair, from all the members who have made those contributions. In my initial indication, I had made admission in terms of the areas where Honorable Madela had intervened on the National Skills Authority, where we look at Honorable Mapanga had also made that input, and the Chair and Honorable Chung had also made inputs that will be taken into consideration. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think the DDG has sort of summed up our understanding of the comments that have been made. But I just want to emphasize, Chair, and one point once again. Before I spoke, I said I spoke to the DG of Labour. I wish that was recorded. We really do speak to one another. Maybe it's not visible in the manner in which we detail the presentations as we speak. But the truth of the matter, we take the issues out there. And secondly, we are emphasizing the issues of practicality, Chair. That at the end of the day, it is not the satisfaction that we want to give to you. It is the satisfaction we want to give to the people we serve. And I cannot overemphasize the concern all the DGs that I've worked with have around it. They are accountability. They are not spanner boys. As Professor Sangweni has said, we are concerned about the job that we are called to do. And we want to be punished if we cannot do that job. And I know the members take leisure sometimes to say we do not know what we're doing. But believe me, the people behind me get this pain more than I get it here. Because our people are not receiving the service they have supposed to have received up to now because of a number of factors. So the pain you have is felt by us more than you think you do. So we're not operating in a disintegrated fashion. That integrated framework of 205 is what we are doing, because labor is me. At the end of the day, it services one old mama in one village. So it cannot be labor, it cannot be me. So it's just that when you present, you put an emphasis on one area. Maybe that's what the member takes and run with it. But that's not the way it is. But the message is, the pain you have is felt by us more than you feel it. And take it on us that we are taking these jobs more than you think we are. And if we are failing, there are ways in which you can take us out of it. That's how serious I think the ones I've dealt with we are. I wanted to emphasize that, because it is painful when you get a critique like this every time, that you don't know what you are doing, you are failing, you don't do this, you don't do this. It hits hard. So I just wanted to emphasize that.
Thank you, DG. Can we then get Austin Pumi? and the state law advisor to come. Yes. And you are welcome as state law advisor. I just assume it's you because I've been seeing these people. I know all of them except you. But I want to remind you of the process where we are because it has been long. Today we are going to the legal advisor from Parliament will present the amendment that we have actually put forth, and then we will adopt them. Then after adopting them, then they will be integrated into the bill. So, and then in the next meeting, we'll then finalize the bill. Today, we are not finalizing it.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone in the house, and I really appreciate the indulgence and the acceptance of my lateness and the apology that I indicated through the committee secretary that I unfortunately have been triple booked for today, and another meeting still awaits me with the Portfolio Committee on Justice. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members and everyone. I am out of breath since I was running to get here after the first task. And as Chairperson has outlined, our task today is very much simple, and we've also made it simple for ourselves because we tried as the supporting staff, that is the department, the state law advisor and myself, we tried to engage with one another in order to ensure that we find one another and have an understanding on what we've put in here and the processes moving forward. So before the members is a draft A list, which is basically a proposal we've taken out of the deliberations that were taking place as the committee has been sitting throughout on the National Forest Amendment Bill. And just two things I need to explain before getting into the document itself. If members were to look at the bill itself, the introduced bill, which is B11 of 2016, when we were starting to prepare the amendments, we picked up that there was, let me call it a misprint, that happened.
Chuck, sorry, members, do you have your copies?
Yes.
Okay.
That happened with the introduced version of the bill. Because once introduced, it becomes an official document. And for us to get to the stage where we are able to prepare the amendments that members have proposed, you would find that every bill has a numbering, not only the page numbers that appear as page 1, page 2, page 3 on top of the bill, but there are other numbers that appear in the content of the bill, which are the numbers we use to locate where changes must take place. But if we look at this one, the National Forest Amendment Bill that was introduced, it does not have those numbers. And that was a mistake and a misprint on the company that prints the final version for us. And that links up to the process that the Chairperson has just explained, that from here we will deliberate on the proposals and then have them incorporated into the bill if the members agree. So if you look at the last clause which we are proposing called the enactment clause, it has nothing to do with the members, but it is the correction process that we need to do in order to make this come into the official status that it's supposed to be, and in order for us to be enabled to get those numbers to locate the amendments and the changes that the members have suggested. So the enactment clause is basically what created the problem that the numbers were not part of the bill. Because if we look at this bill, that portion which says once after you read once after you read the preamble and the long title, that's where then it appears that be it enacted by Parliament, blah blah blah. That part in our introduced bill is missing, and it is called the enactment clause. So that when the bill goes to the President for signing, it is clear that it has gone through the process of Parliament and Parliament has passed it. So without that, that is why then we do not have the numbering within the content of the bill. And this last clause, we are proposing that it be part of this. It will assist us to make the necessary corrections that must appear on this bill. And unless the members pass that as part of the proposal, we will not be able to do that correction. So that is just the first part I needed to explain, which is auxiliary to the main cause of the work for today. But I just wanted to make sure it comes out clear before the members. So what we had to do, because these numbers are not there, we had to do it manually the long way and write out the numbers in order to be able to say, on page so-and-so, in line so-and-so, we are on number line so-and-so. That has been done for purposes of the work of today, but for us to move forward and the members to see this written out in the bill, it will have to be part of the proposals that are passed today. I'm hoping that that is clear just on the process. Now, getting on to... It's CREDA, Jefferson. We work with them. And from the, I'm not sure of those details. But once we've done the work, the bill's office then and the committee secretary submits it through, then it goes through that process. That is why we have the proofing stages where we must quality control and do the proofs to and fro with them until the document is finally what we need it to be.
Have got interest because when the mistake is done by Parliament, we should not keep quiet because it's a fruitless expenditure. Yes, we must talk about it. So let's go on.
Madam Chair, just to get clarity about the process, are we going to go page by page and then talk about that page and then go to the next page, or are we going to
It will depend whether you use pages or clause. Usually we use clause by clause.
Clause by clause.
Yeah, so she will guide us because it's the one that is going to present.
Okay. Technology, Chairperson, is frustrating us, so I'll continue manually so long while they are trying. What do we press there to show
the thing? As you are doing that, Pumi must take this thing very seriously, because if honorable members, you remember at some point we passed the bill and we have to reconvene because it was not done correctly, printing correctly. You remember?
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes, so we should not do those things. If it's us, we must investigate whether that whoever is doing these things is this Parliament, so that we can raise concerns. Because if you have the bill now that does not integrate those things, those amendments, somebody might come and claim that we shortcutted the process.
So, Chairperson, in the meantime, I will speak to the documents that are before us, and thank you. There it is. Thank you. Make it light. the lighting.
Yeah. We don't want to speak more so that people can see on that. Yeah,
so we can see.
But there is the board.
So for this purpose, we will need both the bill as well as this proposed document that we are discussing, which is the proposed A list before the members. There were no changes on the preamble, and then we move to that clause which is at the last page of this proposed document before the committee, which will be the second clause that we need to insert before we go to the definitions. And that is the clause that says that I've just spoken to explain what happened. It will have to read as thus. It is the enactment clause, and it will be found on page 2 of the bill after the long title, and then we'll have to insert the statement which says, be it enacted by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. That also helps to ensure that we do not have laws that come from our other countries, but we are clear that it is the law within our own country and instituted and passed through by our very own members. So it is a very crucial clause because this is the law for the country, and so it cannot come from anywhere else but from within the Republic itself. So this will be inserted, and it will ensure that those numbers that I've spoken to, automatically once this clause goes in, then those numbers by default, they are then picked up by the system and they come in. And then we go back now to start with clause 1. As the member asked whether we'll be going clause by clause, in terms of the proposal that we are bringing to the committee and from following through the deliberations, there weren't any other definitions that we were asked to provide changes to, but this one, the definition for the board, it was not part of the bill because in any case, it was the provisions that create this board, which is the appeal board. They were saying it will be done through the regulations, and that is when we were doing the deliberations, we indicated that the committee took a standing point that they prefer that such a board be established through the provisions that come out within the statute. So that's why now we are bringing forth this definition, which will be added to the definitions that appear already in the bill. And the other ones, through the discussions and direction from the committee, there was nothing that we picked up to say then we needed to change any of the definitions that appear there for purposes of clause 1. Then, Chairperson, for maybe from your direction, you just indicate whether I should wait on each clause before I move to the next one.
Any comment on clause 1? Agreed? Mm-hmm. Let's proceed, Mbume.
Thank you, Chairperson. And on clause 2, again, the department did explain what is intended by this clause and what they seek to achieve by providing for public trusteeship. From the deliberations, other than clarity-seeking questions, there was no indication that we need to effect any changes. So clause 2 will stay as is. We are not effecting any proposals there arising out of the deliberations.
Okay. Clause 2 on the main bill. Agreed?
And moving on to clause 3, Chairperson, clause 3 is making proposals to amend section 7 of the Principal Act. And what we've done here in light of the deliberations is just to make corrections. It's technical corrections that are necessary for the provision to make sense, taking into account that there is an existing section, and therefore with the clarity that the department provided and us having looked into the Principal Act provision as it appears, we've just made these corrections to where, number one, we must correct the original title as it appears there, because it was reading prohibition on destruction in of trees in natural forests. These amendments, if we look at them, they've added that part which says, which is why mainly the department has brought these proposals, to say they also want to protect any vegetation that is produced or is coming out of the natural forest. Hence, now we are saying once the correction takes place, the title thereof, it should say prohibition against destruction in natural forest, which covers everything that is in the natural forest. You are prohibited from destroying or putting into destruction whatever is in the natural forest. So that's what the topic will cover in that table. And then number two is just like I said, it's a technical correction that must arise. Like I indicated when we were doing the briefing and the presentations, that there's a little bit of confusion in the manner we opted eventually to have this bill drafted when it was introduced. So this correction will just make sure that it is read clearly and easily for purposes of making sure that it's implemented properly. So it is just a correction that says on page 3 from line 22, we will have to omit what appears as paragraph B and C. Then we substitute it to read as follows. Instead of what you see there in the bill, then section 7.1 will have to read as follows. No person may cut, disturb, damage, or damage or destroy any indigenous tree. I think the any went in the wrong place. That's another correction you must make. Damage or destroy any indigenous tree or any other indigenous forest vegetation in natural forest. So this process is already also helping us to pick up that the any is misplaced and it's supposed to go destroy any indigenous tree. We will correct that. And then B will read as follows. Possess, collect, remove, transport, export, purchase, sell, donate, or in any other manner acquire or dispose of any tree, forest, product derived from a tree contemplated in paragraph A, other indigenous forest vegetation, or any forest product derived from vegetation contemplated in paragraph A. So what this correction will eventually achieve is that at the end of the day, there is protection against destruction of anything that is in the natural forest. And then the next one, number 3, again, it's just a technical correction, because with the way that we've opted to draft, then there is no need for us to keep that paragraph D. So paragraph D in the B version will fall off, just to make sure that it reads properly and it is not confusing further and creating unnecessary readings by added provisions. That will be the correction we do for purposes of clause 3, Chairperson.
Clause 3, anything? I think on the sentence that we are reading,
there's a lot of repetition. If you cut, disturb, damage, or destroy any indigenous tree or any other indigenous forest vegetation, why not indigenous vegetation and remove the forest?
That's what we asked from the department, chairperson, but some, I don't know, I thought maybe it's technical terms they used.
Can we get sense out of this sentence? Department. To the mic, did you
what
you are recording? Yes.
Answer, almost looking this side because I was discussing it with them in detail yesterday. That a vegetation would be things like grass and shrubs and all that. A forest would be dealing with a tree. And a tree that is indigenous to that particular nation or to that particular tree, to that particular area. So if you destroy it, is different from destroying a vegetation or a shrub. So that is the distinction, as I understood it.
You are correct, DG. The main reason why we are bringing the proposed amendment is to cover the canopy, which is contiguous. If you look at the definition of a natural forest, we define natural forest as a group of trees whose crowns are largely contiguous. Currently, it's only covering the contiguous. So we are bringing any other indigenous vegetation to cover the understory, the shrubs and the grassland, and anything that is within the natural forest.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Chair. Yes. Then, especially since the title...
True, I'm noting this.
Okay, so... Since the title has been changed to Prohibition Against Destruction in Natural Forests, which means that, as she just indicated, they are trying with this amendment to cover all other indigenous forest, indigenous vegetation in a natural forest. Then if we put any other indigenous forest vegetation, then that becomes specific. Since there are forest types, then that kind of excludes other indigenous vegetation that are not necessarily of forest in type. So I think it's more inclusive if we, because it's already about forest, and then if we say any other indigenous trees or destroy indigenous trees or any other indigenous vegetation in a natural forest. Because if I can explain further, there might be some indigenous vegetation types that are not necessarily forest, but that may occur in forest due to changes in land use, climate change, and other factors, which may be protected in terms of the environmental acts. So if they occur in forest, then that means automatically they have to be protected.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question is that if we say prohibition on the destruction of natural forest, meaning alien plants must be removed in this forest, or only you're only talking about indigenous forest only, on top, the title there is prohibition, destruction of trees in natural forest. Which forest? Indigenous forest or alien forest? And then the second thing that I also wanted to say is that you're prohibiting people to remove whatever trees there. Are we saying that the community there must not pick wood that is from that particular forest to make a living? Or are you providing electricity for the community that is in there? Did you take all those issues into account?
Okay, thanks, ma'am. I will start with your question of the electricity and the indigenous. In this one, we are talking about indigenous forest. We are not talking about the alien. And there are provisions in the Act that make provisions for communities to access firewood, like, for example, Section 23, Section 24-7, provide for exemption for those communities that live near or around. They are allowed to come and collect firewood for household purposes. And the Act also make provisions for community or members of the public to apply for license for whatever things that they will need, like mushroom or firewood, if they want to sell them for to make business. So there are those provisions are available. So when I come to content advisor, the reason for the proposal of the indigenous vegetation, it came because most of the time we were having a lot of court cases whereby you find that the, for example, I will give an example of a church, Shembe Church, whereby they have destroyed underneath the understory. But for those people, you cannot open a court case because they didn't destroy anything, whereas they have disturbed the part of, it's part of the vegetation in the indigenous. The Section 7 deals with protection of natural forest. So if you can look at the definition, it talks about the contiguous, or that has been declared by the minister to be in indigenous forest. So it doesn't protect currently the understory. That's why if the Shembe Church clear underneath, you can we cannot do anything.
I thought maybe it's just a question of English. Let's clarify this English. It's not the content. Ground must not miss the point. It's not the content. The content advisor is saying, for the purpose of this sentence to be read, to be understood, if I, you are saying, I'll start where it says, let's say, cut, disturb, damage, or destroy any indigenous tree or any other indigenous vegetation in a natural forest. You remove that forest in the middle. That's what he's saying. Oh, did you?
I think here is a technicality of a legal nature. And I think the content advisor is not farther away from the truth. The issue I just want to caution is not a shameless thing. I apologize on behalf of the deputy, my colleague here. He's just making an example. There is what we call in our traditional societies, amayeza, these traditional medicines, which people would like to go and cut the roots. That is an undercarriage. It's an undercarriage. It's under the stem of the tree. It does not necessarily destroy the tree, but it cuts it and eventually destroys the tree. So this refers to that, that to the degree that you continue cutting there, you actually destroy that forest at the end.
I think we're talking about something else here. Well, it's a sentence, it's in English, that's why I said key English, so that re-clarify that, come quelling cut it. And the, those that were drafting, they are agreeing that we can remove it.
Okay.
You remove the first forest and then you leave the natural forest. Yes.
Yeah. The title should be indigenous natural forest. Indigenous natural forest or just natural forest.
Natural forest.
No, I'm saying indigenous. No, I'm just saying it's not the indigenous natural forest. Have on the title.
Okay.
the heading that we are substituting.
No, we are at clause 3.
No, I put you back to the heading and saying in the heading, the substitutional heading which you are going to substitute, you are not saying you're talking about indigenous natural forests. I don't know if it goes to semantics.
But if we want to protect the indigenous plants, the heading must also reflect that it is. The heading is we are protecting indigenous natural forests, unless I'm wrong. What are you protecting? If the heading does not write indigenous natural forests, what are you protecting in the heading? Indian plants are also natural.
Maybe, Chair, the memo should be drawn, member attention should be drawn to the definition of natural forest. It says that natural forest, in the principal act, the definition of natural forest says that it means a group of indigenous trees whose crowns are largely deciduous or which have been declared by the minister to be a natural forest under section 7.2. Meaning that the definition of natural forest that is in the heading at the moment is not just focusing on the phrase natural forest. You go to the definition expands. It talks about indigenous trees and whose crowns are largely deciduous and who have been declared by the minister to be a natural forest under section 7.2. I think could cover all the concerns that are raised by the honorable member. I also share. Thank you.
In other sentences, you write indigenous. In other sentences, you don't write.
Chair, can I ask a question?
No.
Chair, can we ask, you know, our legal experts here, whether if you remove this issue of tautology or unnecessary repetition will distort the meaning of that clause.
Okay. Legal mind?
The chairperson has proposed that indigenous, you know, what you have written there, you know, forest, you know, seems to be coming back again and again. Now, the issue is now, with your legal or lawful knowledge, if you were to remove that, will it distort the meaning of that sentence? And if it's not going to distort the meaning of the sentence, which means you must accept it. But if it's going to distort the meaning of that sentence, then we are going to leave it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for purposes of background understanding, Chairperson, we need to appreciate the fact and the difficulty that arise from that fact that we are dealing with an existing legislation. And that requires us to be consistent with the terminology as currently used in the existing legislation. So some of the things, if you read it abstractly from the whole text of the Principal Act, they will seem lacking meaning or unwarranted. But if you read it within the context, which is what we've attempted to do, and to ensure that we do not depart so much from the text as is and what is initially was meant to be achieved by that Principal Act and what we are currently trying to correct here. And I think from what has been said, my colleague has indicated that a natural forest is defined specifically for purposes of this Act and what is meant to be achieved through this Act. So from the definition that he has read, natural forest includes, at other instances, the indigenous trees. And therefore, it could extend to indigenous forests because you would assume that a forest is made up of a number of trees. So if the definition of a natural forest goes as far as the indigenous trees, which is why in the first place, if you would recall, we then said this bill should then be tagged as a 76 because it speaks to indigenous trees. And if you look at Schedule 4, it goes as far as that, and that is why there was that a proposal to say it must be a 76. But then again, if you go further into what we are saying, it is not only indigenous trees that we are speaking to, but the department seeks to extend to indigenous vegetation within the forest. And which is why with what the chairperson then read at the end, I understood that we are getting to where we want to go, which will then read, you can't do any destruction, whether you do it in an indigenous tree or you do it in an indigenous vegetation that grows within a natural forest, which could be a natural forest in the way that is defined, or it's a natural forest because it only has indigenous tree. And the definition under indigenous there in the bill, in the act itself, it says it means what is indigenous to South Africa. So that is why when we look at these things, we can't take it abstractly from what is defined for purposes of the act as well as what we must understand and the interpretation that has been given to it. I'm hoping that does clarify the issue between indigenous and natural forest and how we've eventually come to understand and to draft this moving forward.
So, Honorable Chair, it's Chair. You and the Chair, you are fine with it. Okay. Honorable Chair? No, you are the people who are going to explain it to the communities. If you don't understand, we'll understand here and workshop one another until we understand, so that when you go out and explain it, you know what you have passed. So ask, if you are not clear again, let's we rather stop and debate about it until you understand. Because you are the sole custodian. Now it's our bill. We must be able to talk about it without even referring to it. So we must understand it better. So you have the right to ask further, Honorable Chief.
Chair, I'm just saying, because what she said is that she cannot deviate from the original bill, from the original act. So they want to be in line. And I was not there when they did the act, so I don't agree with the way they are inconsistent. Somewhere they write indigenous, somewhere they write something else. So I'm saying, for peace's sake, or for the majority's sake, let's move on. And I will explain it to the community that it is for the majority's sake that we agree that the inconsistency, because lawyers change all the time. They go to court and use a sentence, one sentence, and a person goes out. Just one word, you miss one word in that part, in that sentence, the person goes out. Now she's saying her own thinking here because she's a lawyer. Some lawyer will come and say, we're not in line. That is the name of the game.
Maybe let me try to, I'm not saying I'll convince you. Let me try to explain it, my understanding, which might bring clarity to all of us. It says that there is an act, the act of 1998, Leonevele amendment. Is amended. It was amended and then become, I'm saying the act, this one. This act, it says National Forest Act of 1998. But the amendment bring the issue of prohibition against the destruction of in natural forests. So the issue is, natural forests have been defined in the bill itself. We should look at that, the definition, whether we are happy with the national, how it's been defined there. And if we are happy with that definition ourselves, then it will then be easier to talk about the indigenous, include the indigenous vegetation. You would not have a problem because you understand the natural, what is natural forest. So, but we still have an opportunity, Honorable Chwe, next week as we finalize the bill, we can still take it up and see. We still have another day to look at, even as we adopt these amendments, we can look at that part and say, and make our input. So, can we then proceed with that understanding?
Thank you, Chairperson. That takes care of Clause 3, Chairperson, with that understanding that it's still open for discussion and clarity and finalization. We then move... Clause 4 and Clause 5, Chairperson, from the deliberations and what needs to be effected as changes, nothing came out of this too.
We passed the drafters. You will then look at the way it says indigenous forest, even in other.
Yeah.
And then. Make it so that it's consistent.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And then we move to Clause 6, Chairperson. Clause 6 as well, the change that is there is a technical correction after reading the content and just to make sure that it reads properly. And like I said, it's an existing principal act. So that we do not, at the end of it all, make it unreadable and meaningless. So that correction under Clause 6, which says on page 4 from line 22 to omit paragraph A, basically it corrects the fact that if we remove what appears on paragraph A for section 15, it would have read with some complications and thus make the clause meaningless with the other changes that we have made. So we are retaining what would have appeared in paragraph A of section 15.1 in under the correction for clause 6. And that is all that is to happen there, Chairperson.
Madam Chair, 57B2, it says the minister
may.
57B2.
We're not there yet.
In 6A.
Honorable Kruger, we are moving clause by clause.
Yeah.
We are at clause 6. Not chapter
6. 6 or chapter 6. Are
clause.
We on chapter 6?
Clause
6 of the bill.
Yes.
Sorry?
Clause
6
of the bill.
Sorry.
So note that
for
when we arrive there. Yes. No, that's why I have said we must agree whether we use the clause by clause or page by page, and we agreed on clause by clause.
Yes,
let's go.
The next amendment, unless there are any things that members are raising in respect of 7, clause 7 until 14, we then moved to clause 15, which is the one that deals with the appeal processes in terms of appealing the decisions taken by the delegated officials in terms of this act. So, Chairperson, this is the gist and the main amendment that relates to content as well as changing what was initially part of the introduced bill. Clause 15, Chairperson, like I said, is the one that brings about the new Section 57A, which will deal with the appeal processes. If you recall the previous work of the committee, like I said, the appeal processes had to be indicated in the bill so that they become statutarized. And in this instance, Chairperson, the same was indicated. However, I think where the committee must be clarified as well as provide us with the direction in terms of exactly at the end how we effect this. If we look at clause 15 as it stands, that's why in terms of the proposal it will read the existing clause is to be rejected, because that was the one, 57A, which was providing for the fact that whatever appeal processes there will be prescribed in regulation. And the committee preferred that rather we set it out within the statute, which will then form part of the principal act. So the main thing in terms of what you've provided is for the committee to take a position or maybe give us a direction first in terms of establishing the appeal board, because the other proposal, as it appeared, there were two consequences that might take place, and this is where the committee must give us a direction. Number one, whether the appeal board, as the proposal appears in the A-list, is going to be statutory established. But if you read further, having it established within the statute, it doesn't mean that it will be forever standing. But if, for an example, if we read 57B and other provisions, it indicates that even if it's statutory established for purposes of it appearing in the statute book, it is only appointed whenever it is necessary, which then makes, provides that distinction that, yes, the appeal board is statutory established by the Act itself, but whenever it needs to be put in place, the minister, through the processes that are appearing within the statute, not going to be regulated, will then appoint the members that will constitute that already established appeal board, which is established via the statute. I think I'm bringing this because we had an engagement with the department, and the department was of the view that they would rather have it appointed and established whenever there is an appeal that must take place. But the indication and the understanding from the recent legislation that Parliament has passed through is that it is safer to have it statutorily established, and then whenever it's necessary, then it's appointed. I think that distinction is crucial, and it is also crucial for us drafting the final version for the committee to give us an indication whether we have an appeal board that is statutory established or an appeal board that will only be established and appointed only when it's necessary. I think that's the first main issue for purposes of first provision, Chairperson. Either a statutory established board, but that can be appointed at any time, or a board that is established and appointed whenever it's necessary. Then the second issue again, Chairperson, in terms of this provision, which I thought I will read it in full once I've done with the discussion, but the other one that needs direction from the members and their attention and full consideration is that one which appears in 57E sub 4, which is page 7 of the proposed amendment A list. It reads that when an investigation and appeal takes place, a person who appeals in terms of section 57B may be represented by any person. We felt that maybe the committee needs to provide us with a direction in terms of that representation, because if we say by any person, it is rather too broad. If I have an appeal that I want to take against the decision, I can even bring my grandma and say I want any person is rather broad, or whether we were restricting it to legal representation or just open legal open representation, not necessarily legal, but any form of representation as it appears there. I think I'm just bringing that because it is one of the crucial points that we will require the committee to give us a direction so that the B version produces something that is aligned with the discussions and the deliberations of the committee. And that was the summary of the appeal processes, but I can read them for purposes of understanding, Chairperson, and for the members to go through with us. My colleague wants to add something, Chairperson, on that point about representation.
Chair, just to emphasize this point, Chair, it would be important, Chair, to create a legal certainty in legislation, Chair, so that when it is being implemented, there's no uncertainty at all as to who can represent this person. Therefore, Chair, indeed it is important that this be narrowed down to a specific individual, Chair, who may represent another person. I just wanted to emphasize that point, Chair, to ensure legal certainty. Thank you.
You can. Then we get members to agree on it, and then second issue on the appeal.
Okay, Chairperson. The new section, which will be Chapter 6A, dealing with the appeal board, the new section will be 57A, which is the establishment and constitution of the appeal board. So 57A reads, the appeal board is hereby established, which means it will be a statutory entity. And that is the main discussion I was saying. The committee, we would appreciate if it can give us a direction, bearing in mind that if this provision goes ahead, then it means the appeal board is statutory established. And it will be appointed, as we will read 57B, that a person who is aggrieved by any decision or action taken by delegated official in terms of this act may appeal in the prescribed manner to the minister against such decision or action. The minister may refer an appeal to the board, which must investigate, consider, and decide on any appeal referred to it by the minister. Which means, by following this already provided provision, it means the appeal board will already be in the statute. But whenever the minister receives an appeal, it is only at that point of receiving the appeal that the minister will decide, do I handle this appeal myself, or do I institute a board that will investigate and then deal with the appeal and then provide the recommendation to me as the minister to finally approve. That is what this current provision provides. But in the previous work that we had done and what the department had suggested, that clause 15 was making a suggestion that the appeal board not be established in the statute, but be established whenever it is necessary, be established and constituted and appointed. which is then where we are saying the committee needs to give us final direction. It's going to be statutory established and then appointed when necessary, or we leave it all together and just say the appeal board and the prescription that takes place thereof. That's the first issue for clarity, Chairperson.
What are we saying, Honourable Member? You remember when we're dealing with the other legislation, we have taken the decision, but for the purposes of those members that were not here, I think let Honourable Kruger, Honourable Chew, Honourable Van Dan, yes?
After that decision, that we appoint or my provision for a statutory appeal board.
I
agree
but,
with that.
But I think maybe we should clarify it. It doesn't mean when it's here. Because the powers for the appeals board is the minister. If minister receives any appeals, can deal with them on a daily basis. But if he feels this matter needs an outsider, he can then constitute the board. So we're saying that previously it was not indicating that that. So the proposal was that we did it with other legislation that it will then be statute. But if and it will be established as needed, not as just because there somebody must just establish a board. The power still resides with the minister to continue to resolve those challenges. If he feels these issues cannot, because there are certain things that an appeal, for instance, if I'll give just an example with the issue that was raised by Honourable Chu on the with the people who are cutting trees for purposes of making fire. You have to take your letter to particular Hoshi or a designated person. If that person refuses, then you complain to the minister. Minister can resolve that thing without actually calling the board. But if it's something that deals with, for instance, cutting of roots of particular indigenous trees because it's the medicine, it's discovered by this community and others like the one that we had on the KZN people. You see, it needs technical and research. Then minister can then establish a board to deal with those things. That is what this provision is saying. So but I just have a fear that If we just say the appeals board is hereby established, full stop, it will depend on the reader at the time of who will not be here. They might immediately establish a board. And it is a part of a job creation. So somebody can just see opportunity of getting 7 members of the board too. It will depend on the minister at that time. Opportunity. So we should add when it's necessary, because it must be clear when it's necessary. We must add that one, because I'm not sure whether in terms of your draft it will be a problem. But if we just leave it, it have an open for it will depend on the minister, the consciousness of the minister of that time, to say whether he creates more jobs, because the unemployment is going up. So, Honourable Kruger? No, not Honourable Vandana.
No, Chairperson, I just think that if you have a statutory body, it's appointed, then the minister must do all the appeals through it. But if it's like you are saying now, then it could be different, where he establishes it as and where needed, especially when you have a rights allocation and there's a lot of people that want rights, and then there's a big process involved in it. Then somebody needs to go and investigate it. But if it's a simple matter, then obviously it will waste a lot of time to have the appeal board go through it. That's the way I think. But if you have it statutory, then you must obviously you must give them work all the time. Otherwise, they sit and do nothing.
Honorable Maloy, before you respond, sir, let's give Honorable Maloy.
No, Chair, you know, I was in serious discussions with myself, trying to understand the difference between a board and a committee. And I also went through this document quickly, just to check as to when you talk about this board, what are you referring to? You, the composition and so on and so forth. When you talk about gazettes, you talk about all sorts of things. Which means now we are talking about a serious board which must be established, which must be there permanently, and you must pay them. We even talk about the minister engaging the Minister of Finance about remunerations and so on. So you are talking about a permanent thing which must be there. Whether it is work or not, it doesn't matter, but it must exist. So I'm trying to come to what you were suggesting earlier on, because if the appeals body is the minister, why don't we leave the minister to be the appeals body? But in the process, if needs be, he can establish an appeals committee just to advise him to deal with this, instead of us establishing a board. That's why I was saying I don't understand the difference between board and a committee, because I don't want to talk board. Because to me, when you talk board, you talk about something else. You talk about the Popo Molefes and the Brassas and so on and so forth. So I was just saying, let's be careful. But I was saying, let's investigate possibilities of minister being the appeals body, but if and when it's necessary, can establish a committee to advise him.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to address the issue where they said, let it be a legal presentation. So I don't know if they said whoever wants to take the matter to the minister must have that legal representation. I don't know what did they mean, because my understanding is that any person who's aggrieved can go to the minister. There's no need to formalize it and say, go and get a lawyer to represent you to the minister. The minister is a public representative. It goes back to the people shall govern. The minister. We cannot.
We are not yet there. We're still dealing with the first one. We're coming there. We can.
Oh.
Yeah. We're on the first one. You remember that? Let's do the first one. We'll come back to the second one.
Okay.
On the two spots.
Okay.
So, but for now, are we agreeing with the Honorable Maloy that minister must remain the appeals board, the appeals person? If there is a need, construct that sentence, they'll check the issue of the board and the committee. Because if you have to get a skilled person, the skilled person, you will not get that service for free. So I'm just saying that we should actually agree with this. The board, what are the committees, but we should, the act should reflect that the appeals process, minister will be the appeals person. If the minister fit necessary to establish whatever that we can agree on, whether board or committee, then it can be established for the purposes of getting assistance. So can we close, Honorable Van Dan?
Yes, then we must also just be careful. If you establish a board, there will be financial implications. And at the moment, this bill as it stands doesn't have financial implications. So it will change the tagging as well of the bill if it's going to cost a lot of money. You must just remember that as well.
We can start all over again.
As you said, that we should put it in the legislation, the appeals process. If you remember, it's us. So So I think that they will draft, maybe will draft it such that it will not take the power of the minister, but it will then give the minister powers to appoint. Is it the issue of the committee because they vote? Can look at that. And when you finalize it in the next meeting, we'll get clarity whether we take committee or board or whatever, or council or advice, something like that. So something that does not actually bring the issue of resources in the future. Mr. Vumelan.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and the members.
And maybe the other thing that we must, as we deal with this thing, the appeals process and other things, because in terms of, because the minister has established the advisory council based on the other acts, so what would then be the role of this council? It's an advisory council. And we suppose that minister appoint people with skills, so which we can say can use that pool to resolve whatever is, unless if it's above that pool, then it can then go out of that pool. Honorable Kruger?
Ma'am, if this committee agree that there won't be a board, but rather an advisory body, if necessary, by the president, then the rest of the document is not necessary for us to look at, am I right? Because the rest of the document followed from here is all about that board. So if we're not going to establish a board, but only make provision for a advisory, I don't know what we will call it, but I'm sure the legal eagles will find a way, then we don't have to go through the rest of the document.
No, but what I'm trying to say, Honorable Kruger, because there is the council that minister established based on other legislation, and these people are the experts in terms of forestry. So why don't, is it wrong to be specific? The minister may use his advisory council because it's there already, it's established. It. So we'll get it, they'll restructure it, Honorable Malloy.
No, Chair, I think we must close it there, that we allow them to go and work it out. They will also look into this possibility, whether they can use the existing council and so on, for as long as they have the competent skills and so on to deal with this matter. Because it might be, you can put them both, use the existing resources or establish a committee or whatever to advise on this matter. So they will go and work it out nicely, just that one sentence, and then we close it there.
Honorable Kruger?
Yes, Van Dalen, Chairperson.
Van Dalen.
This part was...
It's a bore time for that matter.
Okay. This part was came as a result because we were taking out part or section 15, which we are not taking out anymore now.
Which one?
I mean, we were deleting clause 15 to put in, to replace it with this.
57A.
The clause 15.
Yeah, which says?
This clause was rejected.
Yeah.
And then that the following be the new clause, and then we go on and on and on. So we can't reject that clause. We can amend some of the things in that board there were some amendments I see that they were trying to make on it. So we need to consider those, I think,
if we can't just say it's, you know, if you understand what I'm saying. Chairperson, do you follow me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so now we must go back to this part, the amendment bill, and see if we are happy with that clause 15 as it stands.
But I thought that we were agreeing that we've given the content that what should go into that, they'll go back to that clause
and come back to us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
and we
fine.
Finalize it.
As long as we don't reject that clause now.
No, we're not rejecting it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I just want to ask that through you a question to the department. Do they foresee a lot of appeals in this regard? Because if we see a problem, the department see a problem that there's going to be a lot of appeals. I mean, we can't then, give the minister a job that he's going to be busy the whole day just with appeals. So I don't know. I can't foresee a lot of appeals. But I can be wrong. So I'm asking the department, do they foresee a lot of appeals?
I think DG or DPG or the people with the forestry can explain the process how it's handled now so that we are at par.
Thank you, Chair. I just consulted with my colleagues. It seems to me that there are some of these complaints that do come, but they are not as regular as in we want permits every day or every month. But I think it's important that we just give an overview of what that process is. Do we have knowledge that we can assess the complaints?
Thank you, Chair. Currently, the way we deal with things, when we receive an appeal, we send them to the minister. So that's where the minister can just create sort of a panel to advise him, and then we take it from there. We don't receive as much of the appeal as the DG has already indicated.
Do they come? Because the other issue is about whether people know about the Act, which might inform how people complain and all those things. There are a lot of people that have been subjected to all sorts of things in the villages because you have traditional leaders there who claim to have own forest, ministers own forest, you know this. So you have those challenges in those areas, but it will depend whether people understand the legislation or knows about it. So I think let's agree on that. We don't reject also this the clause 57A. What we'll do is to look at it and amend it to suit what we have said as a committee. Agreed? Let's proceed. The other issue.
Thank you so much, members and the chairperson. That's a great direction. The other issue, which perhaps depending on how we go forth in terms of drafting and taking into account what has been said, is the issue then, whatever the process that the appeal will take, the issue of representation. If a person requires to be represented, what we had provided here, we were saying it's rather broad because there was no direction, and so we just said a person who appeals in terms of these provisions may be represented by any person. So it was broad, not restricted. And what we are asking basically is whether, what is the direction of the committee? Should there be a restriction in terms of this of that representation, or it must just remain as broad as it is so that the person decides when they meet whatever claim or complaint they need to take forth as to how they go about it? Of course, in compliance with what would be in the statute and the regulations. But in terms of representation, all that we're saying is that from what we have crafted, it's just as broad as it comes to say representation is open. There's no restriction. We are not talking about legal representation. We are not talking about whether you choose so and so. But then my colleague added the point to say maybe legal certainty is necessary to say, are there any caps or any restrictions that we need to bring forth for clarity's sake when we are talking about this representation? And that is the direction we are saying. Perhaps the committee can direct us and maybe guide us to say, eventually, this is an animal looking like this that we should have as the end result in terms of representation, without us saying it must only be restricted to legal representation or specific people that we will express. You can be represented by a lawyer, you can be represented by so and so. We are looking for guidance from the committee, basically, in terms of this representation. And whilst in law, the only legal point we can make is that it is only for criminal matters where the constitution is specific that there has to be legal representation. So in this instance, that's why we are saying we need the guidance of the committee so that the end result is what the committee prefers.
Honorable Chair, you were the first person on this issue, and then I note Honorable Kruger, Honorable Gafa, and Honorable Malwa.
Chair, thank you very much. My view is that we should leave it to any person making a representation to the minister.
Honorable Kruger?
I'm
covered. Honorable Gafa?
Yes, I also feel so, Chair, but I would rather have insisted that a competent person.
What's the problem?
Competent is because he will be acquainted with the issues at hand. I don't think he can be by a priest.
If no, Honorable Clapper, what? Yes. What you know, you must look it in the when it's been administered at the village level, where you have a donor who can say this woman is not allowed to go into the forest where they've declared to go and fetch wood.
Yeah.
So you must get somebody to represent you. It can be a leader of that community. It can be a priest, in that matter, to vouch for that woman. So I'm just saying that a competent person, even the priest can be competent when it comes to those issues affecting communities. That's why we say technicality. When it's technical, it's something that I would want to check with them when it comes to that. Honorable Malloy.
Chair, I'm not sure why the legal people are fixing something that is not broken. I'm just not sure. Because I thought what they would do, which was going to be helpful for the committee, they would have said they are thinking about putting restrictions and then give reasons in order for us to engage them. Because from where we are sitting, the way it is crafted, we are satisfied. They are the ones who are raising this thing of restrictions and so on, and we don't know why, where does it come from and so on. So that's why we can't engage, because we don't know where does it come from. Or maybe they missed us, they wanted to sit with us in this meeting for quite some time. I'm not sure. Thanks.
No, they want to make sure that the committee is very clear, so that you know they're the advisors of this committee, and when the outcome of the Halema's panel, the former president, affect them directly, because they are our advisors. That's why they are so sensitive and allow them to do their job. Okay, so I think members, they're saying that anybody can be represented. I think one of the things that we I'm not sure whether we should leave it to the process, because if, for instance, the support of that person, for instance, if it's a person from the village who must come to the minister's office, because minister does not have an office in Polokwane or in Mulegi or in Tanini or in Mpumalanga. The office of minister is in Pretoria and Cape Town. How does this person make that, if it's a community leader, for instance, or is this a, or this thing, we leave it for the process, it will happen during that process, or we should say the support should be provided to anybody who's appealing. Legal mind? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just offer, I think those are the process or the steps in the process which we will put in regulations, because certainly for far out areas there will have to be provision made for access to the appeals board committee or the minister, and for representations to be made accordingly. Thanks. If I may just offer, we would like, or we would appreciate it if the appeals clause read like the previous bill that we've just put through to the portfolio committee, like with PAPA, like with the plant breeders, plant health, I think. I can't remember all of them, but the idea is to make them all uniform with just minor changes. So we're very much in agreement with what the members have said. Thank you.
Okay, you know, we don't just agree. It's very dangerous. Very dangerous. So I think as we finalize, as we look at these things, the final principles, let's look at the outcome of the panel. Because that report is advising us how our legislation has not impacted to improve the life of our people. In most instances, those legislations became the obstacle, if I summarize what that the outcome is saying. And so we should, as we finalize, we should actually, this one, because we're passing it after the panel, we should be very clear what we want to achieve. We should not do the mistakes of the past, because we must learn from the mistakes and do the right thing. Because we know that most of the acts, why they are not implemented, is because of these regulations that have been established after they were passed the act and is done outside Parliament in majority of time. So if you are saying through regulation, hey, you are raising my ears. How? Those regulations that make it difficult for people to access services. So I think as we finalize, I hope we have read the outcome of the panel on legislation. Because we must be thorough. We cannot do the mistake as we have done before. So any person can do that, but we're saying this any can be a person from the rural village of Kwamashu. How does he access the service? So we agree with the any, but how do we accept any access the service? We have to put in legislation. We can do that homework with our content advisors and researchers. and look at that the outcome of the panel and see how we should finalize it. Can we agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
And the last one? Who was the last one?
The last one, Chairperson, it relates to what we discussed in respect of Section 7. And so Clause 18 is the offense clause which creates the offenses and the penalties in respect thereof. So what we are basically doing is to ensure that that vegetation prohibition which was added onto Clause 7 is also covered for purposes of the offense and the penalties that relate to that offense. So that rounds off for purposes of ensuring that this thing reads consistently, and that's the change in respect of Clause 18, which is also a technical chairperson. And that then brings us to the end of what needed to be changed, and the corrections will be done in line with the deliberations and the directions. Thank you, chairperson.
Chair, it's not on this point, it's just the previous point about regulations. If my mind serves me correct, I think we said for the other legislation and bills that if the minister or if there's new regulations, it must always be approved by the committee. So I think if my memory serves me correct, so it will address your concerns.
But we are at the end of the term now. You might not be here, me and you. The committee might decide or not. They might not. So because as we were indicated, all the regulations were done, they were committees, but they've never had a feeling that they must come to the committee. Yeah.
Chair, on this point, I would like to draw the committee's attention to the National Forest Act, the Principal Act, Section 54. Currently, it provides for the procedure for making regulations, and there's a whole procedure there, Chair, that ensures that the regulations must be presented in Parliament. And if Parliament is not in session, within 60 days after Parliament comes into session, and the regulation must ultimately be approved by Parliament. Chair. Therefore, it is here in legislation that power of Parliament. Chair. Thank you, Chair. Section 54 of the Principal Act. Thank you.
Okay. Laughing because we've been asking this regulation, they've not been coming. So, thanks, State Law Advice. Thank you very much. So the regulation says the Parliament, but it's for this act only. The others were not stated. That's why we are raising when we're dealing with other legislation. So this one actually we are covered in terms of regulation. So we can leave that the issue of the support. I think they must note that the end that we approve, it should then take cognizance that the person might be a person from the village or person who cannot afford a means of transport or and there must be that assistance to for the person to be heard. So maybe in terms of the appeals, because I could imagine that the appeals just focus merely on the two national, for instance, we have not given, if minister, the minister may designate, for instance, if it's, I'm using the villages because the work that we are doing is meant for those people. So in the village, minister can designate a particular person to hear that it doesn't have to be minister and that person unless if that person would want the minister directly and must not again be denied. I'm just looking in the instances where it's the fight of the villagers fighting for the Indunas, two Indunas fighting for a particular forest, and you can then ask the traditional leader to hear the issue and resolve it. So I'm just giving such an example. You don't need to. So I'm not sure whether the clause that's which gives the minister powers talks about can get advice, but it does not say can designate some of the responsibility. So you might want to look at that. So any other issue? Members, any other issue?
I'm just thinking aloud, Chair. In terms of municipalities, how do they interact with the Act? In this instance, it's where the forest is, in that particular municipality. It's not owned by the chief, it's not owned by the community. Governmental relationships, how do we, in the Act, it has to reflect, because they just leave it there and say, it's not my responsibility, it's the responsibility of national, but you find that national has neglected the area, and which makes the municipality untied.
I think or do you have an answer? You have an answer, or you look at it?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Just want to refer to the one of delegation of power. Section 48 make provision stipulate that the minister may delegate the exercise of any of his or her power other than a power referred in subsection for, and the power, the performance of any of his or her duties to the named official in the department, the holder of an office in the department, an organ of state, or a person who or which is not an organ of state.
So thank you very much, honorable members. The process that will follow, because in fact we have raised other questions, we would not finalize the bill in the next meeting. We have to have the amendment be included in the B list, and then we then deliberate if we agree with the amendment as included in the B list. Then we'll then have another meeting to finalize it. So we agree. We agree in the process, so we're not faltering. We don't want you to call us to have another meeting and do the same thing. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. That was the end of our meeting, and thank you for all members, and good luck to the department on your budget tomorrow, and the minister, and you members.
And you, Chair. And me.
Yeah.
Me.
Okay.